Okay, we're continuing from about halfway down on Tesfav Amidbeis 15, side 2. We're going to get an interesting topic about how is Rabbi Meir allowed to have learned Torah from Acher after he went off the path. So let's start from here. Rabbi Meir, Hechi Gomar Torah Mipume de Acher. How was it that Rabbi Meir was able to learn Torah from the mouth of Acher? Bahamar. Rabba bar Chana Amar Rabbi Yochanan, because we know we have a teaching in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. May dechsiv. What is as follows? What's this certain? Ki sif seichoin yishmu das v'tsayir v'vakshu v'piu. So for the lips of the coin should guard knowledge, and the Torah you should seek from his mouth. If Pasuk finishes, Ki Malach Hashem Tzifakosu, where he's like an angel of Hashem. So we're going to darshan my lichsi, we're going to darshan this Pasuk. Im do maharav le Malach Hashem Tzifakos. If the teacher's daima is like an angel of Hashem, Yivakshu Torah v'piyu, then go ahead, seek Torah from his mouth. Vim lav al Yivakshu Torah v'piyu. But if he's not, you shouldn't be learning Torah from him. So how could it? How could Rabbi Meir learn Torah from Acher? So Amar Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish gives an answer. In contradistinction, of course, from Yochanan. Rabbi Meir kro ashkach tvidarash. So Rabbi Meir found a different pasuk, and he darshan a different pasuk. What's that pasuk? Had aznecha ushma divrei chachamim. Incline your ears. Or incline your ear and hear the words of the sages or of the wise. V'libicha tashis l'dayti. But set your heart to my outlook. So how did he interpret this verse? V'datem lo nemar. The verse doesn't say set your heart to their outlook. So in this case, we're really saying chachamim doesn't mean sages. I mean just the wise people. So don't set your heart to the people's outlook. Rather, to Hashem's outlook, al-ladayti. Make sure your heart is towards Shemayim, towards Hashem. But nonetheless, you can incline your ear to the people to get the wisdom, glean their wisdom, as long as your heart is towards Shemayim. So, that's one verse. Another verse that he could have darshaned. Rav Chanina Amar Chet Mihacha. So, rather than Rish Lakish's verse, what was another possible justification for Rabbi Meir? Rav Chanina says the following. Shimivas urich v'hati aznich. Hear, O daughter, and see, and incline your ear. V'shishichi amich v'esavich. But, like, forget your people, your father's house. In other words, you can incline your ear to the people, but don't take it too seriously. Don't go so. Don't actually just go after their deeds. Rather, listen to, you can seek wisdom from people who may not be holding as angels of Hashem, but you certainly need to make sure that you don't go in their ways. So Kashukroye Hadadeh. So obviously the Gemara points out that we have a contradiction. We have the first verse in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, we have another verse from Rish Lakish, and we had another verse from Chanina. So Rabbi Yochanan's verse says you shouldn't learn from the Torah from someone who's not like an angel of Hashem, and yet Rish Lakish's verse and Rabbi Chanina's verse seem to have a basis that you could learn Torah as long as you have your heart towards Shemayim. So the Kasha, the Gemara says, nah, don't worry, this is not a real difficulty. Habigado, Rish Lakish, Rav Chanina, if you're a mature person and you've established yourself, you're connected, you're grounded in the proper teachings already, you're grounded in your hearts towards Shemayim, you have a real bond with Hashem, and you're seeking wisdom for the right reasons, then you can incline your ear, as it were. Ha bikatan. But if you're not holding there, you need to stay away. You need to not go get your Jewish education degree from York University when you're 17. If you're not holding yet, you shouldn't be going and seeking Torah from people who are going to be taking your heart away from Shemayim.
This is what they're saying. If you mature enough,
If you're mature enough, then you can incline your ear as if you understand that your ways are always towards Shemayim and you're not going to be influenced.
Makes sense. But how do you know where you are?
That's the danger, because I for sure I'm a gadol. I don't know about you. You know what I mean? Like, that guy over there, he shouldn't be doing this with me. I can do it. So I mean, that's really the truth. I think this is one of these Das Torah questions that, like, ultimately you do have to rely on someone else because everyone's going to be too biased, right? I mean,
Rav Meir wasn't learning from Acher after he went off to Derech. He was learning before.
No, he would even seek teachings after, to some extent. I mean, his motivation was more to bring Acher back, but he
after.
Yeah,
the point. Didn't apply before, but nobody knew.
Yeah, no, it didn't apply before. We wouldn't have known.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Haki Asir Rav Dimi Amar, son of Dimi arrived from Eretz Yisrael. He said, Ami Bamar Rava, they said in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, raised in Babel. Rabbi Meir Achal Takla, Bashada Shichle Levara. So what's the analogy that Rabbi Meir did? He consumed the edible parts, right? Achal Takla, and Bashada, threw away Shichle Levara, the inedible part, the pit, outside. So he took what he could, but he was careful not to try to eat the pit, as it were. What was inedible, what was not good for his heart, he threw away. So Darsh Rava expounded, my dechsiv. So what's let's make a drasha. El ginas egoiz yirad tilerois b'ibe hanachel. The verse is, I went down to the garden of nut trees to look at the green plants of the streams. So, okay, what can we glean from this verse? Lamanim shalu tamidei chachamim le'egos. Why are Torah scholars, tamidei chachamim, why are they compared? And why is it an analogy to a nut tree? Lamar lecha, Rava says that the drasha is as follows. Ma'egos zeh afal pisha meluch loch betituv tsa. Even though this nut tree can become dirty, soiled with whether it's mud, dirty mud, or even dung. Ein ma shebesoichon nimas. Nonetheless, what's within it does not become repulsive. So it would seem to me that the nuts, obviously many nuts, well, we get them processed today. They have an interesting thing that they have this strong outer shell, and there's a strong outer shell that can protect their inner inside. So af tamid chachamim. Even a Torah scholar, afal pi shesarach in terasso nimeses. And there's if someone brings Torah inside of themselves, it's stored away in some safe, secret place, as it were. That even despite their outer issues, there's some piece of them that's not repulsive nonetheless. You can always wash away your dirt if you do teshuva. Not just Torah scholars; anyone can. So, Ask Chei Rabba Bar Shila Eliyahu. So, Rabba Bar Shila once came upon Eliyahu, Hanavi. Amarle, Rabba Bar Shila said, "My Kavi Hakadosh Baruch Hu, what's Hashem doing?" Give me an update in Shemayim. What's Hashem doing? Amarle, Eliyahu said, "Kamar Shemata Mipumayhu Techuler Rabbanan." He's repeating. Hashem is repeating, as it were, the teachings from the mouths of all the rabbis in the sort of nachas, you could say. There's a sort of nachas from the fact that the Yidden down here are following the Torah and keeping the Torah and involved in the Torah, that they're trying to reach his purpose. He's happy. He has nachas that people are, that his world isn't being completely frustrated by the free will of man, that he is, of course, allowed to be prioritized. Okay, so we'll finish this, then we'll try to explain. Umipume the Rabbi Meir lo kamar. But for Rabbi Meir, he's not repeating any teachings. So Amarle Amai, Rabbi Bar Shila says, why? Mishum de kagamar mishmaite mipume at acher. Eliyahu says, because he's learned Torah teachings from the mouth of acher. Amarle, Rabbi Bar Shila responds, Amai. But Rabbi Meir, Rimon Matzah, Rabbi Meir, is if found in Acher's teachings, he understood it was like a pomegranate. Teuchu achel klipas lazarak. In other words, he threw away what couldn't be eaten, the peel in this case, and he ate the seeds. They were edible. So, he wasn't corrupted by it. Amarle Hashtag Amar Hashem. Now he's saying Rabbi Meir's teachings as well. He's been persuaded. He's convinced. He's now his maskim, as they say. So before we stop, we'll stop and we'll see what the teaching is that Hashem's repeating. So a little background here. So there is an idea here in the notes which I want to just elaborate upon. In other words, why should it matter that Rebbe Shila points out there was a legitimate drasha from the Torah that Rebbe Meir could make, and then Hashem changes his opinion, as it were. Why, before Rebbe Bar Shila says anything, is Hashem, as it were, not repeating the teachings, or not getting nachas, as it were, considering a part of the Torah, as it were? So what's going on? So there's an idea brought down that, I think in Rabbi Yochanan here we see it, it seems it's Rabbi Yochanan, that basically we remember it as follows, that once Rebbe Bar Shila says a clear statement, and there's the sages, the Rabbanim, the people on earth are officially acknowledging that there is legitimacy to these drushas, as it were, is accepted in Shemayim. So the overall idea we're going to just expand upon for a moment is that why is it that, you know, the Torah is Loba Shemayim, the Torah is not in heaven, the Torah is here on earth. So it matters that much that the opinions that we form here on earth, legitimate, you know, Torah-informed opinions, actually affect the way that Shemayim looks at and judges cases. The way it's judged here on earth is the way it could be judged in Shemayim. So I was once asked, a friend who was sitting next to me was asked a question by a student, a young guy, grade 7, grade 8. I said, why couldn't Hashem have just written the Torah, the commandments, write the commandments out, you know? Why do you need the Rabbanans? Hashem could just write a list, as it were, you know? He read all the stories, and then, yeah, man, I'm one parsha, and here's the list, you know? Don't do this, do this. Don't do this, do this. Why do you need drushas? Why do you need these gray areas? Why is it that the Rabbanan are empowered, as it were, although they only make their Rabbanans, it's derisive that they can make their Rabbanans? Why is it that there's a whole level of Torah that Hashem empowered us here on earth that we should, as it were, complete the Torah, apply the Torah in ways that are creative and that it could have such relevance in Shemayim? So I would have never given this answer, but the reason I'm going to share is just because it seemed to actually affect him. I was surprised by how much it seemed to be a good answer. So maybe you'll tell me later, I guess. But so when we're in school, I taught the student, and in school we have to mark on these rubrics, right? So you have level 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's a bit frustrating, to be honest, for a kid. To the extent that it used to be, if you knew the whole content, you can get 100%. You know, I know everything you taught me. Now it's a level 3. Level 3 is you're as it were, regurgitating. You know? You're giving back the information I gave you. That's level 3. Now, level 4 is the highest. What's level 4? It's when you're taking it, I see that you understand it to such a depth, you can reapply it in novel ways. That's level 4. So level 4 is an opportunity to get even more reward. That if you show that you understand it, it can internalize it and reapply it in novel ways, in creative ways, that you, right, you show you really, really get it in such a deeper level, you're going to get more of a reward. See, you could say that maybe as an analogy, that Hashem also did it this way, right? Yagdil of Torah Adir, right? Hashem wanted to give us more reward, so he allowed us, it was important to him to allow us to do that final stage of completion of the Torah, as it were, to apply it in a way that he hadn't dictated every element of it. In a way that we ourselves, just as the Baal Shem Tov says a nice, beautiful chiddush on humankind ourselves and our own personal growth, right? Nase, right? Let's make man in our image. Baal Shem Tov says, who is Hashem talking to? Not just the angels, but man himself, right? We talked about this once before, but the bottom line is that man wasn't finished his own creation. So to the Torah itself, although the essence was there, it's just like Hashem gave us the task on a personal midos level, as it were, we need to finish our own creation. So to the Torah itself, he gave us an element to act in a divine way on the Torah itself and finish its completion. And it was an opportunity for us to get much more reward. So you see this idea here as well, that you see the reality of this idea in this teaching, that Hashem, because Hashem wanted to give us this, give us more reward, allow us to finish not only our own completion, but even the completion as it were of the Torah itself, that it's important what we judge here on earth, that it becomes a reality as it were in Shemayim, to the extent that it can. So what's the teaching that Rabbi Meir says? It's a beautiful teaching. So Hashem, as it were, repeats the following. Mir bini Omer, my son, Rabbi Meir says, Bizman Shadam Mitztair, at the time a person suffers for his sins, Shechina Mala Shonomeris, what does the Divine Presence articulate? We appreciate this in the Gemara itself. This isn't a Midrash, this is the Gemara itself saying this. Kalani Miryoshi, Kalani Mirzroi. I am burdened by my head, I am burdened by my arm. Okay, so that's step one. We'll stop there, we'll continue in a moment. So pointing out that, again, we saw this before. We need to bring it out again, so we really take it to heart. Right, we said that when you're having a philosophical debate with someone, and people are taking anthropomorphisms too seriously, then you have to point out that when we speak about God, we're not speaking about God literally. We're speaking about the way that God interacts with the world, and we have to be careful about overly anthropomorphizing. Of course, there's a huge danger, and I think you see it all the time. I seem to, it's my impression. I could be wrong. People are very hesitant to use the basic tools they were given to have a real relationship with Hashem. You know, when you're so careful to not make anthropomorphisms that you don't allow yourself to learn this type of teaching, it really cuts away your ability to have a relationship with Hashem. We talked about Shimshon Pinchas made a very important point that Hashem created, just like Hashem, as it were, I'm speaking it out, paraphrasing. Hashem can see, so He gave me eyes. Hashem can love, so He gave me love. Hashem gave me pain, right? Hashem, as it were, can have some sort of pain, so He gave me pain. So therefore, that empowers me to if I feel pain, I can imagine Hashem's feeling something like that. The mistake, what I cannot do, is to think that my pain is what limits Hashem's pain. Hashem's pain includes my pain, but is not limited to it. Hashem's love includes my love, but is not limited to it. The bottom line is that I can learn from my experiences, right? The fact when I feel pain, Hashem can feel pain, right? So again, like if I really took this to heart, how am I angry with Hashem? Hashem is voluntarily, as it were, feeling pain because I'm in pain. When Hashem is bringing something into my life that hurts me, how could I ever say that Hashem is doing it as a tyrant? How could I ever say that Hashem is doing it because of an issue of, like, He's in a power struggle with me? Yeah. He's in a power struggle with an ant, right? As it relatively in the power scheme. I mean, how could I say that? He himself is voluntarily accepting pain upon himself, right? I need to realize this, or I can't have how can I have a relationship with God? Now my whole life is a yeshiva to some extent. You know, obviously there are better ways to spend your day, but you have learning possibilities in every aspect of your life. Right? When I love something, right? Then I can appreciate how important it is. When I have a loving relationship, I can appreciate how important it is that I maintain that loving relationship with Hashem. Right? When I shlep nachas for my kids, I can appreciate how important it is for me to give nachas to Hashem. And chas v'shalom, if I feel betrayed by a relationship, I can reflect, in what way am I betraying Hashem right now that He wanted to bring this into my heart? I can reflect on all my experiences and all my relationships. Everything is enlightened and enriched. My relationship with Hashem is enriched. My sense of hashgacha, my realization of the hashgacha, is enriched. Everything becomes important in this sense. There's nothing that necessarily has to be chol. No relationship has to be chol. Every experience I can reflect on. What experiences? What emotions? What am I feeling from this? And is there? Can I reflect? Is there something? Am I doing this to Hashem in some certain way? Some sort of way. So it's very important that we don't over fear anthropomorphisms to the point that we cut ourselves off from our relationship with Hashem. This is Rebbe Meir. Hashem himself is saying this. Is saying this teaching, right? We shouldn't be afraid to take to heart that we can learn from our experiences, learn from the way we feel, that the feelings that Hashem ultimately brings up in our lives. But yet we do have to be careful to not over anthropomorphize. Remember, the way we love, Hashem loves, but our love does not limit His love. There's a whole mysterious, non-literal section that goes beyond our love. But nonetheless, I can learn from my feelings to Hashem to some extent, and I have to, I have to, as it were, I have to acknowledge that, or I'm going to be missing out on a lot of opportunities to learn. Okay, we'll go a little further. Still, we still have some time.
Just one thought.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, we're saying that you're saying earlier that Hashem gave us the ability or the initiative to learn the Torah on our own instead of having it all laid there for us.
Yeah,
and that brings us closer and it gives us an active part in the whole thing.
Yeah,
but it also there's cases we know there's cases that are described in the Torah where people took the initiative and they interpreted things in a certain way and ended up being the wrong way and they got killed. You know, they walked into the altar in the wrong time.
There's
cases like that where it's like they had the best of intentions and they're saying, well, Hashem gave me the initiative to try to interpret what he meant.
Yeah.
Except I interpreted it wrong, so you're out of here.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Everything has to be, everything's filtered through the qualitative majority, right?
Yeah.
So it's like a physics, I don't know, I hope this is a fair response. You know, we know in physics, right? You know, if I walk into a high-tech physics lab and I decide, I posken for them that the universe is flat or whatever, you know what I mean? The world is flat. They're going to laugh at me, right? So I'm not empowered to interpret everything according to my whim. But if I'm allowed to bring my opinion to the qualitative majority for them to debate it out. And right. So once Rabbi Bar Shila, who was part of his qualitative majority, gave a lecture to it, and then it became part of the Torah legitimized. You're right. It's a very interesting question. I was reading Divrei Yoel on Parsha Shlach last week. It's a bit of an aside, but he wrote a very interesting question, which hits your point. It says why was it by the sin of the spies that Hashem gives them, as it were, he gives them room that if he says that, you know, I created people so that if they want to err, you know, I gave them the world that if they want to make a mistake, I give them room to make a mistake. And he lets them make a mistake and ultimately it leads to their downfall. Whereas other times, he doesn't say that. He gives them much more room for teshuva. In other words, the next day you want to come back, you want to go invade the land the next day? Okay, I'll let you invade the land the next day. Like, where is this line? When is it that Hashem, when is it that we're crossing the line where in that room for us to err, we go too far? And where is it within that, where is it when we don't go too far, when we can just do an immediate teshuva? So I think it's somewhat related, at least.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but ultimately, at the end of the day, I mean, that is why we have to be connected to some sort of Das Torah, because we do need to be connected to that qualitative majority. We need to connect ourselves to it, because it does end up becoming reified, as it were, in Shemayim. And we need chavrusas and all these things to speak out our ideas and make sure that we're going to check. Okay. And we need to pray that we should be saved. Okay. So let's finish this point. Imkach. So what does Rabbi Meir say at the end of the day? Imkach HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitztayer al daman shel rishayim. If Hashem feels this way, feels pain, even when the wicked are in pain. So Rabbi Meir points out, Kal v'chaymer al daman shel tzadikim chenishbach. How much more so when the blood of the righteous is spilled? How much more pain? How much more painful? How much more does Hashem cry that he is allowing this? He's not allowing this to happen out of malice. It's very hard. He doesn't want to have to allow this. I mean, in this superficial surface analysis, he's given us free will. You could say he's given us free will, and it's so important that we have free will that he's allowing the blood of the righteous to be spilled. But it hurts. It hurts him. Okay, we'll do a little. Go ahead.
Well, saying that God is pained by this spilled blood of the righteous.
Yeah.
He's the one who's allowing that to happen.
Well,
so not only allowing it, I mean, if he didn't want it to happen, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, so no.
So you can't allow it to happen and then say, I'm pained by it.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Then don't allow it to happen if it's going to cause you pain.
No, but we're, okay, but, I mean, we need to figure out, I think it's a good question. Maybe it's just we need to articulate the circumstances where it wouldn't be an issue, right? In other words, we're being told it's not an issue. So what are circumstances where it would? It can't be that. And what are issues where it wouldn't? That's not a possibility, right? So let's just, maybe I'll speak out the idea we're saying just a little bit. I think that it's legitimate to justify where it could be understood. And so we know, we talked about before, that the whole purpose of this world is that we need to have free will. If we don't have free will, that we can hide Hashem's presence from ourselves, then the whole point of the world is frustrated, because we might as well be up in Shemayim, where his presence isn't hidden to begin with. Right? Obviously, we don't want ultimately the purpose of this world is to reveal his will as well, right? And Yom HaMashiach will be living in a time where his presence is revealed, but it will be revealed through our free will, and therefore the critical mass of revelation through free will will have been achieved. So it's a different era, as it were. But right now, the purpose is that we only reveal his presence through our free will decisions. Now, if the whole purpose of the world is dependent on Hashem being committed to free will, then at the end of the day, he's committed himself to free will for a greater purpose, right? He's committed to his free will for a greater purpose. So if he is allowing such and such a person to hurt Reuven out there, right? Hashem doesn't necessarily want Reuven to be hurt, but because of a combination of free will decisions that have been made here, Hashem committed it for the purpose of ultimately being able to the greatest possible purpose, right?
I get all that.
Okay.
Based on the free will of other people.
But then how can we say it's hypocritical for Hashem? When I bring my kid to the doctor, right? I don't have a kid, but in theory, in an analogy, you bring your kid to the doctor. It pains you if he's crying because he doesn't understand that he's getting the needle, right? But I'm still bringing him to the doctor because this is part of the ultimate healing.
But the scenario you're saying has more to do with a third party injuring somebody else, because that each individual has a free will.
Yeah.
Somebody just contracts a disease and dies, and it's not a third party. So we're saying that God brought this, and it's a righteous person, and now he's upset. So I'm saying, so then why'd you do it?
I think it's still the same similar answer. At the end of the day, ultimately it's about having, you have the emunah that Hashem's doing it or allowing it for some great purpose. Nonetheless, so therefore it is where his hands are tied behind his back, as it were. In order to accomplish that purpose, this has to occur. But it hurts him that in order to accomplish this purpose, this has to occur. Like,
isn't it just like if you're taking a medication?
Yeah.
That's going to save your life,
yeah.
But it has very bad side effects,
yeah.
And you're vomiting and all these kind of things. But why are you taking it? Because you want to save your life, saved, yeah. And you have to put up with these side effects.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
Yeah, there's a purpose that you really would rather the circumstances were different, right? But you have a purpose. So it's saving your life or something. In a way more sublime in the spiritual sense, saving our soul, adding to our soul, giving us a huge gift. But nonetheless, right, Hashem wishes that the circumstance can be different. He wishes that he didn't have to accomplish this through a person feeling pain. Fair enough?
Yeah, listen, it's one of those age old...
The point is we have to take into our hearts the emunah that Hashem always has a sublime purpose behind what's happening. And if we don't take that into our hearts, we'll always be lacking we'll be lacking something in our connection.
There's one other angle to it. The way I'm thinking is that Hashem is all powerful, so there would be for sure an alternative way that he would know how to do it without that pain. It's just like in giving my example of the medication. Okay, but if it was Hashem who invented the medication,
no, but here's the point. Yeah,
invent a medication.
I mean, I
could, without side effects.
I can answer. I think truthfully, but yeah, I mean, ultimately, you have to say that based on the definition of truly earning is right. We talk about we're earning our divine peace, our divine the soul. God creates in the divine image, and we have to earn that. Right, so based on the truth of what it means to earn something, there are a certain set of rules, and order, right, and therefore Hashem is committed to this set of rules. So therefore, you can't say that Hashem could have done it in a different way, because if he gets around the rules, he's also got around the truth that you've actually earned it. And in Shemayim, where truth is everywhere, he'll have stolen from you from the opportunity to really gain what he was trying to give you. So perhaps we should leave it there since we're about to have a